everyone, and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. We're so glad that you are with us tonight. And if you're joining us live, we'd love for you to share with anybody else that you would think that would want to be part of this conversation. Tonight, we're talking about transitioning, which means, can you get your child ready for what they need to be ready for? And how do you do that? And how do you plan for that? And this is kind of the last week in the month of February, and we've been focusing on IEPs. And usually that's part of what the IEP plan is. But my guests tonight are going to let you know that instead of just the typical, let's start planning at 14, that we maybe should start a little earlier. So even if you don't have students who are towards high school age, this is going to be a great conversation for you to join in on. And so make sure that you just share this and continue watching, because we'd love for you to be part of this conversation. Definitely put your comments, questions in the feed. And so I want to introduce my guests tonight. Brandy Timmons and Wendy Dawson are from Social Motion Skills, and they're going to explain a bit about that and what they do there. And but they are partners with Sped Homeschool, and I've known them for a long time, and they just have hearts that want to help parents, and that's what they're all about. So and their kids too. So welcome, ladies. I'm so glad to have you with us. Thank you for taking time out of your crazy schedules. You both live in Houston as I do, and it's been a crazy week for all of us. So I appreciate you taking some time to be part of our show. So
we are thrilled to be here. And as Peggy said, we are longtime supporters of the Homeschool Network. And I'm actually the stepmom to a almost 26-year-old son now, who was diagnosed with autism when he was two. So This whole topic of transition and movement towards independence and just preparing them really for an independent life that we want as parents, that we feel comfortable in, that they can succeed, and preparing them for the life that they are able to embrace and be confident in and succeed in, really is near and dear to our heart. So, Brandy and I talk about this every day, and I come in and I was like, oh my gosh, this happened last night, and how do we solve this challenge, and how do we teach this lesson? And, you know, I was like, you're not going to believe this happened. And we're like, oh yeah, that's typical. So how do we break this down, and how do we solve this? So it's very much, it's just what us mommies do. You know, we're really blessed in kind of this blended world of being a mom and educator and owners. And so I really, Peggy, as I always say, I really hope that what my family has gone through, what our company has gone through in our evolution, is able to bring resources and kind of a window to the world for the families who follow behind us in this path.
Yeah, so true. Yeah. And I also want to thank Bookshark. They are our sponsor for this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. And we're going to hear more from them as we about halfway through this broadcast. So I want to thank Bookshark for that sponsorship and allowing this broadcast to happen and to come to you for free. So, and we are broadcasting live right now on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Periscope. So, ladies, before we get started, I would just like you, I know Wendy, you already talked a little bit about yourself, but I would love for you to share both your heart for families and how that came about, just a little bit of your background, and then what you do at your business. And I know we're going to talk about a new program you have too a little bit later on. So I don't know who wants to start, but I'll let you fight over that.
Go ahead.
And then I'll give it over to Brandy. So, yes, I married my husband about 20 years ago. Kind of can't believe that. And then with him came two children, a daughter who's about to get married next year, and this amazing child who was four when I met him. He had about a 40-word vocabulary, as I just said, he's been diagnosed on the autism spectrum at about 2. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what it meant to parent. Obviously, I didn't have children. I really, really just honestly had no clue. You know, there was a file in the file cabinet, but, you know, I think, I mean, this was 20 years ago, right? So parents were still very much in denial, and you're like, well, this autism thing, you grow out of it, or we can do therapies, and, you know, just, we're just going to ignore it, and we'll do speech therapy, and everything's going to be fine. Right. So, of course, that's not the case, which is fine, because we have this most amazing young man in our lives every day now, whom we love and has taught us so much as a family. And since we're kind of in a family situation tonight, I think one of the most amazing things is how Cameron is his name has changed our family for the better. And for us as parents, and also raising two kids who came after him, because it's given us the ability to help our children really understand, you know, what does learning differences look like? What does disability look like? What does diversity and inclusion look like? And it's something that we hold very near and dear to our heart. And I really think that our family has benefited from this, and that Randy knows I tell my kids all the time, I was like, you know, you guys are the leaders of the world that are coming, and you've got to understand that not everybody thinks like you, and be able to recognize different thinkings and the talents that your brother has, because he has many, and be patient and quiet and calm and listen to him and think, because he really brings a different perspective to the world. And so for that, we're definitely proud and blessed. So that's kind of our journey. I mean, you know, you married into this, and we're raising all these kids through school, and all four of our kids, you know, everybody's very different. They've got different school paths. And so I think one of our the things that we think about every day and that we explain is that even amongst our kids, it's not everybody has the same path. And what was what was right for Cameron's big sister was not necessarily right for him. And what was right for him is not necessarily right for the younger siblings that follow. Right. And so kind of leading into this whole conversation of transition. And what does transition look like? And it's different for every child and every family. But, you know, jumping ahead to the topics, it's really what I think spurred us to realize that we needed to create a company. We founded Social Motion 10 years ago because there was no place in the community to teach social skills. So there were special schools and there were therapists and, I don't know. But we couldn't find what we wanted. So it was like, I guess we
so like a good mom, you create what you need.
Kind of that mama bear kicks in, right?
Right.
And so that's what we set about doing 10 years ago, was creating a safe place where these individuals, primarily on the autism spectrum, because that's what we knew, that was the problem we were trying to solve, but also those with similar differences, where they could come and connect and find community and get the social skills training that they needed, and have a place where that evolves. So we actually started with a really small group in a church in about the tween age level, about age 12. We grew that, and then younger parents were coming to us and saying, well, how do we get this training? Because we hope that our teens have this training by the time that we get there, because we see how beneficial this is. So that was kind of the evolution. So now we work with about, I don't know, 200 individuals a week, ages 4 to 54. And it's kind of just, I guess my happy place is knowing that I'm a mom in this community. We live this life. We walk this life. We are raising a family, and we're like so many families, and we just, we lay it down and we lay it out there, and we're ready to learn. And The biggest part is share our resources. And I've never been more blessed than when Randy joined our team, because she's the brain behind this is what you need and this is what you're talking about and this is how we solve these issues. And so I just really feel blessed that we have been able to create this resource for our community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's like you said, there was nothing 20 years ago, because that's about the time that my son was diagnosed. And like I said, there was maybe two books that existed on autism, and you're as a parent going, what do you do? And so, so thankful that there's so many more resources and resources like what you guys do at Social Motion Skills. So what about you, Brandy?
I've been with Social Motion for about, believe it or not, almost 4 years now. So I have been in the education field for about 20 years now. I started out as a public school teacher working with kids of all different disabilities. So I've worked with everyone from early childhood through young adults. So there's not much that I haven't seen, been there, done that. fell in love with kids with autism many, many, many years ago, and just love figuring out the different strategies that work for them, because so many of our kids, it's not a matter of things that they can't do. It's just giving them the tools and the strategies and helping parents understand how to teach their kids and how to use those strategies at home, not just at school. So about 6 years ago, I decided to go back to school and became a board certified behavior analyst, and have really been able to use that at Social Motion to help build some of the programs that we have, and just to increase the knowledge that our parents have, which is what we really want to talk about tonight with transition. You know, we have a really unique perspective at Social Motion because we do serve a lifespan of kids. So we have the young adults that come through, and we get to see those barriers that they face when they try to reach independence and try to gain employment. And we kind of know where you're headed no matter what point you come in to us. So if you come in as a four-year-old, we can kind of tell you where you're going and what you need to do to get there.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah. Because now, like the public schools, like I had said when we got started, they have, like, it's called a transition plan that usually they start around age 14. And yet, what I'm hearing from you is that's not the best approach. So what? How should parents look at this and say, you know, we want to help our children to be able to transition to, you know, whatever skills they need, you know, into life, into maybe even just the next set of school years. How do they go about that? What is a good, I guess, mindset to come into that with?
Kind of interesting question. I think I'll let Brandy delve into the details after this, but one of the biggest things that we've realized is independence is really a process. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that starts at age 18 or age 14. And that's really been one of the, I think, biggest mindsets, problems that we saw when our own child was in high school, is the delayed attention or the delayed approach to transition. Like, you're thinking all of a sudden you graduated 18 and you've got all these skills. Well, since, of course, that's what we pay attention to all the time, we know that that's really not true.
Right.
We've really kind of made conscious and intentional and very purposeful focus on backing transition planning up to as early as possible. And it's so interesting because Cameron's a good 10 years older than our other kids. And so having him grow up alongside the younger siblings, it's like, okay, well, you have skills and you need to be part of the operation of this family. That's our words in our family. So it's everything from setting the table to cleaning up the dishes to cleaning your room to walking the dog to bringing in the mail to whatever it takes to be involved in the operation of the family. And it was really interesting because we had age differences, we had kind of cognitive differences. Right. But you know what? Everybody can participate, and that's what it takes. And so my biggest things is we always try to dole out those responsibilities appropriately and mindfully so that all the kids felt empowered and responsible and important, but also that they were learning. And we'll come back. One of the big things Brandon and I talk about all the time is life does not happen by magic. And if you don't start embracing that idea and teaching your kid that life doesn't happen by magic as early, and I would even throw it out there as early as like four, that they grow up and they don't know. I mean, how can they not know? Because if everything happens for them and everything's done for them, then by golly, life does happen by magic. You know, I got food on the table. I got clean clothes in the closet. I mean, my bathroom is clean.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So Brandy, why don't you add some details to that? That's kind of the big picture of where we come from and why transition is so important.
Yeah.
One of the big things that we talk to our parents about all the time, it's kind of a theme for everything that we do, is presuming competence with our kids. So a lot of, you know, a lot of times your parents, they get a diagnosis and then they automatically assume, well, there's so many things my kids can't do. But, you know, there's, when you're teaching and you're working in a school district with your paraprofessionals, you're teaching them to start at the top and back up. So assume that they can do everything that everybody else can do. And then if they need a little bit of help, you can back up and start providing that support. Because our school systems usually work backwards. They usually start at the bottom and they break it down and start with one task and then move up. But a lot of our kids aren't missing so much the whole skill. They're missing little splinter pieces. And so if you assume competence and assume that they can do a task with the needed support, then you're going to make a whole lot more progress. So that's kind of an overarching principle that we use with everything that we do. And we try to get our parents to understand that. And like Wendy was saying, there's so many things that parents can be doing just on a day-to-day basis to teach transition and build transition skills so that when they hit that magic number of 14 or 16 or 18, you don't have to be stressed and worried, did I do everything that needed to be done? So,
and I can see how positive that plays towards a child too, who you're saying, I know that you have in you what you need to do this task. There may be little pieces missing. You know, how much better does that make them feel than you to approach them and say, well, you can't do this, so here's how we're going to plan this out for you. So I can see that being extremely empowering to the child as well, and making them want to be at that level of competence as well.
You know, Peggy, it's so interesting because my child is now almost 26, and he has gone away to college, graduated from Texas Tech, and is now back living at home with a full-time job and a girlfriend. And so I say that because I love to be, I think, a beacon of, I guess, hope or positiveness that, you know what, your child is going to do more than you ever thought that they could do.
Exactly.
The reason I say that is because you never stop skill building. And it's really interesting because all the little steps along the way add up to what they need to be able to move out independently. Because now my son wants more than anything to move out to his own apartment. He lived with college roommates, but they still had a meal plan and they still had the classes to go to everything. And everything was pretty much prescribed. But now, you know what, we're realizing that there's gaps in his understanding and everyday it's not only understanding, but it's stamina because he's working a full-time job. And we as parents know it is so hard to wake up in the morning, prepare those lunches, prepare the dinner that night, go to work all day, come home, make dinner, you know, wash the dishes, do everything that you have mm-hmm. to do. It takes a lot of stamina.
Right.
And so that in itself is part of the transition mm-hmm. building so that they have the skills and they understand what it takes
yeah.
so that the day that they are ready, that they mm-hmm. are motivated, they have the desire and the capability, and we want to fulfill that dream mm-hmm. that they are able and have the skills to be able to move out and live on their own.
Yeah, and then, exactly.
In a week. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what we're preaching here is you cannot do it in a week.
Yes, exactly. Or even a couple years.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's so true. Yeah. Well, yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And yes, my son is in the same place at 24. Yeah. So graduated from college and is home working full time.
Right.
Doesn't have a girlfriend. I don't think he ever wants one. But that's a whole nother story.
That's a whole nother webcast, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, he's quite content.
So, yeah.
So what would you say are some ways that parents and teachers work against helping students gain independence that maybe they don't even know that they're doing? And how can they keep just what they're doing makes a student almost dependent on them? And I know I'm probably guilty of it myself, but are there some that you've seen, you know, that more so than others in working with families?
One of the biggest things that we see in our kids, and it's so easy to do to them, is teaching them learned helplessness. Learned helplessness is kind of a concept that comes from providing support to our kids, which, of course, they need. But what happens is we start providing them that support, but we never fade the support away. So we don't ever really give them the opportunity to do things on their own. Mm-hmm. Another thing that we do quite often actually, is we give them support before they really have had a chance to try. So it's, you know, as a parent, especially, that could be really difficult to sit back and let your child, you know, struggle a little bit. Let them try first before you step in and provide that support. It goes against everything in us. It's a skill you have to teach. When I worked with paraprofessionals, that was something we worked on all the time. Mm. It was like, okay, stop, give them a minute, let them think about it, let them try first, and then step in. And then prompt fading is knowing that if you've provided, like, let's say you're doing a demonstration of a skill and you're providing some hand over hand work to help them with the task. Well, once they do it correctly, the next time they try, don't do that much support. Just give them some verbal support and see if they can do it on their own. And then once they've done that, then back off a little bit more. Maybe you don't need to give them verbal support. Let's just point to some things and show them some steps. So there's really some conscious things that we can do and in very intentional ways that we can help them not to become dependent on us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there's also a lot of, through your actions, you build self-esteem and you teach these kids that you are valuable and they are worthy, and they are competent, and they are smart in their own ways. Because you know what? Whether we like it or not, they struggle all the time with, why am I different? Why do I have to have special ed? Why do I have to have tutors? You know, if I'm so smart, why is this so hard for me? But you know what? Your actions at home, basically treating them as normal and teaching them the steps to do, does a lot to build up their core and their self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
They have to believe in themselves. They have to believe in that they are smart and that they can learn and that they can fail. I mean, like what Brandy's saying is all of our kids do this. I mean, and I've got such the perfect visual in front of me every day with, you know, my kiddo on the spectrum and then my neurotypical kids here too. But it's like, we wouldn't do that to our other kids. It's like, oh, well, go try to bake brownies and, you know, if you put a tablespoon of salt in the recipe instead of a teaspoon of salt, oh well, next time you'll realize that happens. But I think our instincts are to overprotect, and what that does inadvertently is teach them that we don't trust them, that they're not capable, that they're not able. So, like a perfect example, you know, is reading the mail. Mail is hard. You get lots of junk mail, and you get fake mail, and you get lots of mail that looks real that's not really real. So instead of, like, teach your kid how to read the mail and sort through what is junk mail and what is important. And, I mean, you get all this stuff from insurance companies. And I've been a big believer, don't hide reality from your children.
Yes,
you know,
I so agree with that.
Got to know basically what do things cost and what is the value proposition in that. And when you go to the doctor, then you get follow-up paper. And how do you take care of that? But anyway, this is an example in my mind is sorting through the mail. Of, instead of having them come and bring you the mail and say, well, here it is. It's like, well, has your name on it. It's about you. Open it. Read it. Tell me what you think this is. You know? And it's really important for them to take that ownership of their life.
Yes.
You know? To be able to understand bank statements come in the mail. Health insurance comes in the mail. Car registrations come in the mail. And I know we're probably talking down the road a little bit for some of these kids on in transition and independence. But you know what? It's there before you know it. And if you and God, we're preaching tonight, if you're not starting as early as you can, learning these skills, even at the most basic level, by the time you get there, you're going to have so much catching up to do. It's a really hard climb.
Well, as you're talking about that, Wendy, what it makes me think of is, you know, you're supposed to teach your kids when you sit, when you stand, when, you know, bring them with you. Don't just leave them at home all the time. And sometimes that's really, really difficult. And it means that a shopping trip is going to take extra long. And, you know, all these other things that we do. But those are the environments that they have to eventually survive in. And if we aren't teaching them, who is? And they aren't going to do well. So true. Brandy, you want to add something to that?
Yeah, there was one other thing that for your homeschoolers that are trying to build transition plans, one thing that they need to try to be really cognizant of, and of course, as a behavior analyst, I love data. So there's something that's called the Goldilocks principle. And with the Goldilocks principle, you have to be really careful to make sure that you're not giving your kids tasks that are too hard. Because if you give them tasks that are too hard, they're going to get really frustrated. And you have to be careful not to give them tasks that are too easy, or they're going to end up bored and not learning anything. So you need to make sure that your tasks are just right for your kids. They need to be things that they're capable of doing. They may have to have a little bit of help, but that's okay. But and the way that you find that is assessing your kids all the time. And that doesn't have to be anything hard. It's just ask them to do a task and see how much of that they can do so that you know where they are, so that you know exactly what level that they're at. So that's a really good way to keep them from becoming dependent on you and learning helplessness.
That's a good point. Yeah. Well, we're at a really good stopping point. And so I'm going to give you guys a quick break and we're going to hear from our sponsor and I'm going to bring you back and we're going to continue this conversation. And Wendy and Brandy have a whole bunch more to share, I promise you. So I'm going to give you guys just a break off the camera and I'll have you back in just a second. But we are going to hear from our sponsor, Bookshark. And if you've never heard of Bookshark, I'd love to introduce you to them. They are another one of our partners at Sped Homeschool, and they have a curriculum that they want you to know about. So Bookshark is a homeschool curriculum. It's literature-based. It's four-day, faith-neutral, and you can see more about them at bookshark.com. But Kim McNary, a busy homeschool mom, says, my daughter is on the spectrum as well as has OCD and has instantly taken to this curriculum. It's incredibly structured, which makes us both ecstatic. The books are great, and the kits are awesome, too. I'm running my daughter to all kinds of appointments, and this curriculum fits in amazingly. We are first-year Bookshark customers and happy as a lark. You know, Kim is right. Textbook Shark is fully planned. It's a four-day homeschool curriculum that flexes to match your busy lifestyle. The detailed instructor's guide lays everything out so clearly that you just prepare by opening it up in mere minutes, gather your resources, and you go. The curriculum is for ages 4 to 16, and it's available in all subject packages or in individual academic areas like reading with history, language arts, science, and math. With Bookshark's literature-rich curriculum, your child will read or have read to them 30 to 50 engaging books each year. Awesome. Visit bookshark.com to browse curriculum, download samples, and request a catalog. And we just want to thank you, Bookshark, for sponsoring this episode again. And also, if you want to see the curriculum, some of it, on our YouTube channel, we have an unboxing that one of our team members has done of one of their curriculum sets, and also reviews. We're starting to do those on our website. And I want to invite you, if you are interested, I'm going to put in the description of this YouTube video, we have a new review crew. And if you want to review curriculum and products and services of our partners, then we would invite you to do that by filling out an application. So thank you, Bookshark. And I'm going to figure out how to get that off there and bring Wendy and Brandy back. I do want to let you know, if you're watching with us live, and I see we have some viewers, that you can join us in this conversation. Definitely post your comments, your questions. We would love for you to be involved. Since we are live, that's what we do. So thank you, ladies, for that break and for hanging around. And so we've talked a little bit about the what and the why. How does a transition plan help with accomplishing student goals? We've talked a little bit of things, but Wendy, you had said things just don't happen by magic. Mm-hmm. And I want you guys to elaborate on that a little bit and how we can fall in that trap. And then also, how do we avoid it and help our kids not to think that they can just do what Harry Potter does and life will all turn out right, or however.
Oh my gosh, that's such a big loaded question. I think one of the biggest revelations I ever had is the difficulty that my son, in our personal case, has in problem solving. And So things don't happen by magic, but even in your house with these kids and going back to teaching them the self-confidence and the self-worth and the belief in themselves to ask questions and not to be ashamed and not to feel like they are compromised or that, why shouldn't they ask questions? Because you know what? Everybody asks questions. And this is something I've really learned with my 26-year-old is, for some reason, he thinks, quote, normal people don't ask questions. And we're like, questions all the time. But really working through that fear of weakness or that fear of exposing, I might not understand. And helping them problem solve, because Peggy, one of the things we fight the hardest against, and Brandy can be testimony to this, is we can teach and teach all day long, but we cannot teach every possible scenario that life is going to throw to these kids. I mean, in a different place, a different environment, a different school with different people. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that, what tools that we've used is kind of a problem solving flowchart. So I like my son to think about that. Can I solve this problem myself? First of all, you got to recognize you got a problem, right? When the toilet doesn't flush, when the wrong pizza shows up, when you don't have the right kind of socks to wear with long pants or short pants, when you're out of shampoo. I mean, I can go on and on and on, right?
Right.
Those are all problems. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do about them? You know, are you going to do nothing? Mm-hmm. Are you going to get mad? Are you going to go seek help? Is it something that you can solve yourself? Those are all really maturation steps in this process. You know, mm-hmm. a 4-year-old isn't going to be able to problem solve the way a 24-year-old. So let's give them the tools to think through those steps. That life doesn't happen by magic, and life is work. I mean, I tell my kid all the time, it's all work because life is work, and it takes effort. And you've got to make the effort to do this. And I'm going to throw it to Brandy now, because the other thing we talked about is taking the opinion and taking the guesswork out of transition.
So for all of our kids that come to us at Social Motion, I do an intake. So I meet the families, meet the kids, and ask them different questions and try to get a feel of, you know, where the kid is, what kind of expectations the parents have from them at home. And one of the questions I always ask is, do you have a set list of chores at home? And they invariably, every one of the teens will look at their parents like, no, don't give me any. You know, but about probably 90% of the kids that come through, they don't have any expectations at home. They don't have set chores. So a lot of those things that Wendy was talking about a minute ago, you know, the food on the table, the clean clothes in your drawers, you know, the towels and the washcloths that are in the bathroom. Right. For those kids, it does happen by magic. They wake up and everything is done for them. So one of the biggest things that I think that parents can do that's really easy to build in is giving your kids those chores at an age-appropriate level. And you can Google for chore list for developmentally appropriate. It's easy to find them. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised at what some of the chores are on those lists. And then as part of your transition planning, teach those skills every week. Set aside time every week to make sure that you're teaching your kids how to do those things. And not just teaching them how to do them, but relating them to real life. You know, why do you need to know how to do this? You know, the 14-year-old boy.
Yes.
Yeah. But so many of our kids, if they understand how it affects them personally, they're more willing to learn. They're more willing to do that. So if, you know, if you have a 14-year-old that wants to get married one day and you tell him that, you know, you're going to have to do the dishes sometimes, then he's going to be more likely to want to learn how to do that than he is just if you give it to him and say, you have to do this, you know. So make sure you're teaching those things and make sure that you're having, again, presume competence, have those expectations for them.
Peggy, again, with a really, really long focused lens, one of the things we have the benefit of seeing, because we work with so many older individuals, young adults in their 30s, is that for those who didn't have the chance to build these precursory skills at like age 12 and 14 and 16, they're not doing summer jobs. They're not working for their parents. They're not, I mean, back in our days, we'd like, mowed grass or walk dogs or, I mean, wash cars, whatever there was, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of our kids aren't having the chance to have these summer jobs and these little added tasks. So guess what else they are missing out on?
Mm-hmm.
Taking instructions, making sure that they do the full job to full completion, right?
Right.
Taking feedback of like, wash the car. Oh, well, you missed a spot here. Mm-hmm. How does that make you feel? And so if our kids aren't learning these little jobs and little feedbacks and why they're important and why it's important to the operation of the family, by the time they get to be 22 or 24 and they're trying to enter the workforce, they don't have the skills that they need. And so what we see from all of our 30-year-olds is that the transfer of competencies, as I like to call it, from those teenage years, from the school-supported years into the employment, the job environment, it's not going to happen. And again, that's the next step. It doesn't happen by magic. So another of our little slogans is, by making it too easy on them now, you simply make it harder on them later. Because it is almost impossible for these young adults to be 22, 24, to walk into a working environment, to an office environment, or to a job site, never having had a job, never having had that feedback, having learned to make the effort when you don't want to do something right. that you don't want to, because I don't like doing this. Well, guess mm-hmm. what? We all have to do things every day that we don't like to do. How do you handle that frustration? How do you handle that uncomfortness? How do you talk to your supervisor about, I really don't understand this? Mm-hmm. And so by going through what Brandy was saying, all of these building blocks, what you're doing really is enabling your child to be successful by the time they need it, the next step in life.
Yeah, I completely agree. I always tell my kids the best thing that happened to you is we lived on a farm for 5 years and you had to feed animals. And you had to go out when it was 10 below and feed the animals. And But yeah, there's chores you can do when you live in the city too. But but yeah, they've made them stronger. So for what they are. So as you know, kids are gaining independence. Is it possible that that they could look like they're more independent than they are, or that they're covering up the things that they should be learning? And how do you deal with that?
Ooh, very good.
Yeah, that's a big one. We see it a lot. The term masking is what we see quite frequently, a lot of our, especially our young adults. And usually that shows up when you ask them if they understand things. Oh, yeah, I got it. I'm good. I understand. I know how to do this. And then you give them a task and it's like, no, you don't. No, you don't. So you have to be really careful to make sure with our guys, a lot of times asking them if they understand is not enough. Get them to repeat back to you. Get them to explain back to you what you've told them. Have them demonstrate for you what they're saying that they understand, just to make sure that they really learned the concept, made sure that they really do understand what you've told them. Wendy can tell you some stories about that in just a second. But one of the other things as far as for our parents, it's really important for you to remember to teach your kids to do things to mastery. And I just want to throw that in real quick.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people, you know, you talk about actually more than just to mastery. You want to teach things to fluency. So when you're teaching to master, they've shown you that they've got it a couple of times. But when you teach something to fluency, they don't have to think about it anymore. And so when you're teaching these skills and when you're doing these things, make them demonstrate. Make sure that you're teaching it until you can see that they've really got it. So they're not able to mask those things. Because the masking can cause a lot of problems in a lot of situations.
Yeah. So you got some examples, Wendy.
That's the most important point on that. The older the kids get, the better maskers they are and the bigger the problems it causes. You know, if they're 12 and they're masking that they know how to make up a bed or put a book cover on a book or do a presentation, okay, fine. But they're 24 in the workforce, and they're saying, I got this, but they really don't know how to create the Excel spreadsheet that they have been asked to do. There's a lot more, life gets a lot more serious and complicated really fast. When you're not able to own up, again, I go back to that self-esteem to be able to say, you know what, I'm so sorry. Could you just show me exactly what you mean? Or can you explain? Can I just be sure what you're asking me to do? Giving them that, the tools to take that mask off with healthy self-esteem is so important because, you know, they're going to fake it till they make it. Because they don't want to be called out. They don't want negative attention drawn to them. But at the end of the day, people are going to lose patience or they are going to change their opinion really quickly. And it just never ends up good when there's not honest communication about what those skills are.
Right. And the anxiety and all the other things that come with that.
Right.
So yeah, so true. Yeah, my daughter called me out on masking because I have autistic tendencies, and she's like, "Mom, I know when you are doing it." So it's like, oh yeah. But you, like you said, you learn to be good at it when you need to use it. So that's,
Right.
yeah. So when you're looking at a student's ability to transition on their own as a lifelong learning skill, what is the most important core skill? And I think you already touched on this a little bit, Wendy, but it all boils down to
Problem solving. Definitely.
And I'm assuming, that's something you just work on consistently, is helping them walk through that process. Do you have
We
any
boil it
pointers?
down to a flow chart. I mean, I don't know if it's just kind of the way my brain works, but it was just a very simple visual and thought process of a 1, 2, 3, because our kids are already overwhelmed in those situations. So, I think you just have to think about what is, what works for you and your child. In problem-solving situations, but for me, it's stop and think about, recognize I have a problem. I don't know what to do, and I'm okay with that fact. Okay, it's like you got to admit, I got a problem. So now, what am I going to do about it? Right? Can I solve it by myself? Okay, that's going to take effort. Let's make the effort to call somebody, or walk downstairs, or go. Go ask somebody what you need. If you really don't know how to solve it by yourself, then who is the go-to person? And that's what we can do as support caregivers, is always let these people know, who do you go to when you really need help? It's totally okay to ask for help. Who's got your back? I mean, we've all got somebody who's got our back, right? That's part of life. So go ask for help and say, I don't understand this, or I'm confused, or so the ability to recognize that you have a problem, figure out, can you solve it by yourself, and maybe try. And if you fail, that's okay, but at least you tried. I tried to do this, and then it didn't work, and then go find somebody. But that to me is the lifelong kind of game changer, because every day, every point of the day, it's nothing but problems, whether it's in communications with somebody, whether it's actually physically taking care of a household, whether it's in a job. That skill of working through problems is huge.
And a lot of parents don't realize there's a really specific strategy that you can use to teach problem solving. So you can start with your little ones, and it's actually by sabotaging situations. So when you're doing activities, instead of giving them all the steps, forget one. And make them have to figure out what that step is. So you work on problem
It's like a
solving when
game.
the, yeah, well, you work on it when there's not really a problem, is the big thing. So you start teaching that, and you can do that really well with all of your little ones. So that's definitely a big skill that can start, as soon as you're ready, they're 4 or 5, go ahead and start teaching that skill.
Love that. Yeah, because then there's not that anxiety that a problem brings with it, because you
Right.
almost have this anxiousness of, got to solve it, I've got to figure it out,
Yeah.
and that doesn't help when you haven't brought that to fluency, like you were talking about, Brandon. I mean,
Right.
we yeah, you want that problem solving process to be fluent as well. And if our kids knew, that the wisest people ask the most questions,
Right.
and that's the truth. And I think we think that the smartest people have all the answers. They don't. They just know where to go. And yeah, and I do think it, and I've seen the same thing with my son on the spectrum too. He doesn't want to ask. He thinks that intuitively he has to know. And I grew up the same way. I remember my dad doing the same thing. So, it's just it's something that the brain just kind of locks in on that, and that you have to know the answers. But the more that you keep repeating that and teaching them that there's so much we all don't know. So I want to give you guys some time to talk a little bit about your new project, the Transition and Employment Center, and how that came about, where parents can find you, how they can connect if they want more information. And I'm going to put your website up here. And so they Wendy and Brandy have been talking about social motion skills, and so their website, the standard website, is socialmotionskills.org. /TEC_lab, and / again is where you can find their TEC center. So, so what's this all about, and how did it come about? I want to know.
This is Brandy's brainchild, and she has brought this to fruition in our community. So, I want her to tell you all about it.
Awesome.
So the tech center came about, of course. Like I said, I love data, data-driven instruction. One of the things that we find so often with kiddos that are looking for transition services is they really don't know what they want. So like Wendy said earlier, so many of our kids have never worked jobs. They don't have any work experience. You know, they don't have really an idea of what they want to do, or they come in with really unreal expectations. And so the Transition and Employability Center is a hands-on vocational assessment that takes place in a simulated work environment. So the kids get to come in, they have to clock in and clock out every day, just like they're going to work. They, the teachers are not teachers, they're supervisors. They get to explore hands-on vocational tasks in 5 different areas. So computer technology, business marketing, consumer services, construction, industrial, and processing and production. So there's about 260-something tasks that they get to explore. We really get to find out where their strengths are. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at what skills do they already have. We're looking at how competitive are they in the skill. Can they complete a task in a rate that's going to be competitive with someone else? Mm-hmm. And then we're also assessing their work behaviors. So a lot of our kids that come to, well, the young adults that come to us, it's not that they can't do the jobs, it's the behaviors in the workplace. So maybe they can't take constructive criticism, or maybe they don't have the stamina to do a job. So what we're really doing is building a portfolio of their accommodations that they might need.
Ah, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, yeah, like you said, they haven't been in those environments, they don't know, mm-hmm. and when you can document that, when you can track it with that data, then it's easier to ask for those accommodations within the workforce. And so you're providing an intermediary step.
And after they've completed the assessment, they get a really nice report back that you can take to your transition director, you can take to your transition services coordinators, whoever you're working with, that gives them an idea of exactly what skills they have and an idea of what types of training they might need to move forward and be successful. So really taking the guesswork out of transition and using data to help our kids and our young adults be more successful in that transition.
Super exciting as a parent, because now I get this report and I'm like, oh my gosh, these are the skills my child has. These are their interests, mm-hmm. and the barriers to behavior that are going to possibly impede them in successful competitive employment. So right. I'm still in high school. Now I'm going to my counselors or my homeschoolers or wherever we're working on. And you've still got those really formative years to start kind of chipping away and tackling these problems, mm-hmm. working on internships, getting volunteer job positions that really hone into and focus on the direction. This is like the
right.
You've been given the light at the end of the tunnel. And so mm-hmm. we're here and transition is there. But now you've kind of got a map of what needs to happen between in the next year, in the next 2 years. And we found that it's been incredibly valuable and satisfying. And I think satisfying for parents, because they're like, oh my gosh, we finally have some data. Mm-hmm. It's no longer the opinion of, well, I think my kid's good at this, or, you know, my kid is great on the computer because they can, you know, hit 30 Google sites in 30 seconds. Therefore, they're going to go work for Google. You know, it's like, well, let's figure out, you know, how does that really work in the real world?
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what age group do you recommend this program for?
We start taking them at age 14, which is the transition age. So about seventh grade, age 14. And as far as upper age range, just any age, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah. The assessment itself takes about 80 hours. So it's not a short assessment, but we work with the families typically about 2 to 3 days a week for 3 hours a day is what we recommend. So it usually takes about 8 to 9 weeks to complete the assessment.
Okay. All right.
And this is super for families who are in the homeschool situation, because hopefully you can find flexibility in the day. So like Brandy said, you could come in the mornings for 1 or 2 days a week, or in the afternoons. So really the tech center is there, and it's open with flexibility for those who homeschool and have, you know, flexible hours.
Yeah. And you guys are located in Houston, Texas. I want to just let our audience know that, because we do have an international reach. So, if you're not local, but there is a lot of things on your website, socialmotionskills.org, that parents can take advantage of remotely too. And also, can you talk a little bit about your other product that Encuentro, just so I don't have that website up, but if you just want to.
So, you know, kind of in the new world, we're really always trying to figure out how do we best serve our families, and how do we spread the reach and the knowledge of what we have kind of amassed and learned over these years. And so Encuentro is kind of our, I guess, baby in incubation. So it is a video-based product, primarily for those not in the Houston area who are not able to physically come to our center, because we believe in in-person services, and the tech center that we just described for you will not work virtually. Encuentro is really meant to be an extension of the learning opportunities of social skills and parent training opportunities for parents who do not live in the local area. So we're really excited to have learned what we did. It's kind of been a trial project. We were working in this space before COVID. COVID actually proved to us the value and the need for virtual services. And so now we're really looking maybe to take it a step further with the goal really of getting out to the communities who don't have access to resources like Social Motion Skills in Houston. We live in an urban area. There's a lot of families who can come to us, but you know what? What about those who live with, Brandy, tell them where you came from. I mean,
very small rural East Texas town. And I was the only BCBA within 100-mile radius for a very long time. And parents have to drive for hours to receive services.
Exactly.
So that's kind of our heartbeat with Encuentro, is reaching out to those that they'll never be able to come to a center like we have available in Houston.
Right. Yeah. Or else a lot of parents will travel for, you know, and stay somewhere and get the services, you know, that they need within a week or two, stay at a hotel and then go back. It becomes so costly. And yes, those rural families really do struggle. And we lived in the sticks for a long time. So I know.
COVID taught us that this is possible. And it really forced a lot of people up the learning curve that they can access services like this. So there's a lot of things in the market we're waiting to change, the acceptance of telehealth, the acceptance of teleservices. So that's kind of where we're moving. We're still piloting classes. We're still trying to learn how we can take our offerings wider into more. So if anybody has questions, anybody outside the local market has questions about our services, we would love to be able to help you.
Yeah, awesome. So, and if I'll share those links in the YouTube description as well, and you can find both of their organizations on the Sped Homeschool website too. So yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you, ladies, so much. This was so informative and just filled with so much wisdom that yes, we need to be thinking about transitioning all the way through and raising our kids and schooling them and just not overcompensating. So lots of good information to take away. I appreciate you both sharing. And
thank you.
It's a process.
Yeah. Well, awesome. So, and thank you, viewers, for hanging on with us. You didn't have any questions or comments tonight, but I know you're out there because I see how many people are watching. So I'm just quiet this evening, which is just fine. We want to thank also Bookshark for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. We changed our name at the beginning of the year, and I'm still having a hard time switching over with that. So we are done with our month on IEPs, and as Brandy was talking about data and tracking, well, guess what? Next month, we're going to be talking about data and tracking and planning and organizing and all of those things that you're like, I don't want to do this, but it's necessary. And so we've got some guests coming up in the month of March. They're going to help you with those things and give you some tips and tricks and just how do I do this. And so we're launching next week, and one of our guests is going to talk about organizing your classroom, your homeschool classroom, for success. And she actually teaches and coaches parents on how to do this for homeschooling kids with special needs. So I'm excited about that topic and about that new venture we have coming up as well that I want to share with you is that we have just launched some webinars on a brand new platform called Empowered Homeschool Network. And so you can actually visit that at empoweredhomeschool.org, and you can see those webinars there. And we're going to be adding a lot more to that site. This is just the beginning. But the site, empoweredhomeschool.org, you'll see what it's going to be. We've got listed on there our vision for that site and just how we're going to bring you together with partners like Wendy and Brandy and let them be able to teach you their in an expert way, courses, master classes, and a whole bunch more. So we're excited for that. So thanks for everybody for joining us tonight. Just continuing to listen to our broadcast. I know there's a lot of you that listen to our podcast, so we appreciate you downloading us every week. And we'll see you again next week, right here, same place, same time, 8 o'clock Central, and on Tuesday night. So have a great night, everybody, and thanks again, Wendy and Brandy.
Night, Peggy.
Has fear stolen your peace? I'm Jennifer Slattery, lead host of the Faith Over Fear podcast, helping you fight your fears and grow your faith. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.